Next case is 07593, Linda Wall versus Tyler Swinney. Mr. Ballmer.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Andy Vollmer, and I represent Motorist Mutual in this appeal. And I would like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal with the court's permission. Motorist urges this court to answer the certified question in the negative, thereby stating that motorist policy language defining insured in the UM/UIM portion of the policy has a definite legal meaning, and further, that any alleged ambiguity in this case would not be read in favor of a non-policyholder. Now, obviously, the reason that we're here is on a certified conflict. And it's important to note at the outset that the decision that brought us here from the 12th District Court of Appeals is the only decision in this state that did not find motorist policy definition of insured in the UM/UIM endorsement to have a clear and definite meaning. In urging this court to answer the certified conflict question in the negative, I would respectfully suggest that the court consider 3 points. The first is the overall policy language. And by that I mean, in this policy, there are 3 definitions of insured. There's one in the liability section of the policy, there's one in the medical payments section of the policy, and then obviously the one that we're talking about in the uninsured, underinsured motorist section of the policy. And each one of those definitions is different, thereby signaling that the UM/UIM definition means something different from the definitions contained in the other 2 portions of the policy. And in particular, I think it's important to note that in the medical payments coverage section and in the liability section, the definitions state that a person occupying in the medical payments coverage section, a person occupying the insured vehicle is going to be covered for medical payments coverage. Now that is how motorist defines insured when it wants to cover anyone who is in the insured vehicle. Obviously, the UM/UIM section is different. In the liability section of the policy, the definition is just a little bit different. In that portion of the policy, it states that anyone using the insured vehicle would be covered as an insured. Those 2 definitions are clearly broader by the very language used in the definitions than the definition that we're talking about in the uninsured, underinsured motorist section of the policy.
Counsel, before you get on to your main point, to understand policy, you're insured. Your policyholder would need to understand that there's one definition of who is covered under the medical pay, there's another definition of who is covered under the liability, and there's a 3rd definition of who is covered under the under and uninsured motorist coverage, and those are 3 different separate distinct universes, correct?
Yes, sir. There are 3 separate and distinct definitions, and I believe...
Isn't that asking an awful lot of your policyholder?
Well,
to understand that?
I think that anyone reading the policy would immediately have those visual cues, that there are differences between the 3 definitions. There is a statement in the policy that the policyholder should review the entire policy. So, and I think as a matter of law, when courts interpret insurance contracts, historically and traditionally, the policy should be read as a whole, and portions of the policy should be read in such a manner that they're in harmony with one another. And to me, having these 3 definitions, different scopes of coverages, different types of insureds under each portion of the policy is harmonious. It is harmonious. And this particular definition of insured makes perfect sense because the underwriting is not done on someone who's a guest passenger or a guest driver for UM/UIM coverage. UM/UIM coverage has historically been written to cover persons and not automobiles, and people should look to their own UM/UIM coverage, what they themselves bought for coverage when they get hit by an uninsured or underinsured motorist.
If I can clarify, if you purchase a policy and you give permission to someone to drive it that has no insurance of their own, your own UM/UIM would cover them under the terms of this policy, correct?
Yes, if I understand the question correctly, that someone who is in our vehicle who has not bought their own coverage.
Who has no insurance, so they got no uninsured on UM or of their own, so they're fully covered. Why would not the policyholder's expectation, even if they see this language, be, okay, if they have coverage, their coverage comes in first, but I still want to protect anybody in my car up to the limits I'm buying up UM/UIM. So the person who has 12.5 would get the 12.5 from their own company, but still I wanted to provide protection for the difference because I want anyone that drives my car to have UM/UIM coverage. Why wouldn't they, reading that language, make that assumption that that's really what they're doing? Yeah, you can't get everything from me because you got UM on your own car, but you can get anything that's underinsured from my company.
Well, and I think that the I appreciate that question. I think that what because this is in the definition of who is an insured, it separates out that scenario because the person obviously does not qualify as an insured to begin with, which I think should signal the policyholder that this person who is either a guest passenger or a guest driver in the car would have to be looking to their own coverage as opposed to the coverage provided by the motorist policy. So because it is the limitation, if you will, is contained in the definition as opposed to an exclusion in a separate part of the policy, that actually excludes the person from being an insured under the policy. So it does make the person obviously have to look to their own coverage. And I don't think that that's an unrealistic expectation for the insured to look through their policy and to see that someone in their car who has their own coverage with another company is not going to qualify as an insured under this particular policy. And what I would point out, and I think this has been established in the briefing, is that Motorist is not the only company that's doing this. If you look at the England versus Stafford case, there's Lightning Rod versus Grange, which is mentioned in the briefing, and also the Keffer case, which is mentioned in the briefing. This is a definition or a type of definition that many companies are using at this point.
The Court of Appeals opinion was based on its conclusion that the language in question is ambiguous. Why don't we talk about the language so that that's the issue, I think. Your brief and amicus brief, of course, say it's not ambiguous, and you conclude that, you know, that there should be a reversal. Walk us through your explanation here of why the language in the UMI portion of the policy is not ambiguous.
Yes, sir. The language is not ambiguous, refer back to this court's decision in Gladys, where this language has been found to have a definite legal meaning by several of the courts who have reviewed the language. That's first and foremost. However, also, I think it's important to consider that the basis for saying that the language is ambiguous is the so-called last antecedent rule. And getting to my point about looking at the policy as a whole, the last antecedent rule should only apply where no contrary intention appears. Here, if the policy is reviewed as a whole, and even this particular definition considered, there is an obvious intent behind the language to exclude those people from the definition of insured who have their own coverage. So there is no ambiguity because there can be no application of the last antecedent rule. Now, there's some criticism of the 8th Appellate District's decision in the Safeco versus Motors case saying that it was devoid of any linguistic explanation of the policy language. But I don't think that's a fair criticism because the majority opinion did consider the language, and it did consider the argument surrounding the last antecedent rule, but it found the policy to have a definite legal meaning. And once that finding is made, then there is no ambiguity in the policy. And by law, the law would require that the definite legal meaning be employed as opposed to the alleged ambiguity. Breaking it down on a more basic level, the ultimate question is whether that word for, the prepositional phrase starting with the word for, modifies the two nouns before it, and those being named insured and insured family member. And the obvious intent is for that prepositional phrase starting with the word for to modify both nouns. Otherwise, the definition does not have a meaning that makes sense. And I would point out the fact that in every other portion of the policy, when motorists is referring to its own named insured, it uses the word you. So that first term, named insured, doesn't make sense there. It sticks out like a sore thumb, because if motorists was talking about its own named insured there, it would say the word you. So we break one rule, so to speak, of the policy if we adopt my opponent's interpretation of this definition. However, I think it goes beyond that, because then, at that point, what we're really saying is, up above, the definition of insured includes you and any family member, and then it goes on to say, anyone occupying your vehicle, unless that person is a named insured. Well, if we're going to exclude a named insured from the second part, our named insured from the second part, then the policy is at conflict with itself there, because we just extended coverage to the named insured for UM/UIM coverage. Now we're going dropping down into the second part of that definition, and we're saying, well, we're going to cover anyone occupying your insured vehicle unless that person is the named insured. It just doesn't make sense to read the policy that way. A far better way to read this policy, and in my opinion, the only way to read this policy, is to read it in the way that it was actually intended to be read, which is that it would exclude those people who are either a named insured or an insured family member on another policy for UM/UIM coverage. So I don't think there is an ambiguity in the policy. I think the policy has to be, the definition has to be carved up in order to find that ambiguity. And I think the reasonable construction of the policy has to be disregarded in order to find that ambiguity. And other courts have looked at this. They found it to have a definite legal meaning, and that definite legal meaning should be adopted over the strained interpretation that I believe my opponents in the 12th District Court of Appeals adopted in this case. Having said that, I can see that I've already cut into my rebuttal time. Unless there are any further questions, I'd like to sit down at this point and then use the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Vollmer.
Thank you.
Mr. Nordstrom.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Chris Nordstrom, and I represent Appellee American States Insurance Company. We are before the court today to address a narrowly worded certified question. That question is whether the definition of insured as any other person occupying your covered auto who is not a named insured or insured family member for uninsured motorist coverage under another policy is ambiguous and should be construed against the insurer to provide coverage for a permissive operator of a covered auto who is not a named insured or insured family member. There are a couple of things about that particular issue, certified question, that illustrate the narrowness of this question before the court. And I think it's particularly relevant in light of what appellant has already mentioned, that it is his position that this is an outlier case. This is a case inconsistent with other decisions, when in fact this is the only case that addresses the specific facts that are present before this court in the Wool versus Swinney decision. The narrowness of the question before the court is illustrated, number one, by the reference to a permissive operator in the question itself. Jim Slattery was driving Linda Wool's vehicle with her permission. He was not a passenger in the car. He was a permissive operator. Number two, the specific language that's present in the motorist policy means that this case is not about different policy language used by other carriers. And there are examples in decisions that have been cited to this court that involved Grange's definition, which is different than what motorists is using. Amicus, in the case State Farm, uses a different definition. This is only about the language that is present in this particular motorist policy. And number three, although it is not specifically mentioned in the certified question, the fact is that Jim was a named insured and not an insured family member under his own policy, his own 12-5 policy with American States. First and foremost, as has already been discussed, a policy is to be read as a whole, and as a permissive operator of Linda Wohl's vehicle, Jim was indisputably an insured under motorist policy. He was an insured under both the liability and the medical payments coverage. He was provided with a defense in this case for a period of time. He was paid under the medical payments coverage. He is no more a stranger, to use motorist term, to this policy than a named insured's spouse or a family member would be. And Jim obviously was an intended beneficiary of the policy by virtue of the existence of that fact.
Counsel, before you proceed further, could I just direct you to that language that we're talking about that's in dispute and that's ambiguous?
Yes.
As I understand your interpretation, under another policy only modifies an insured family member. Modifies that clause? Is that what your argument is?
Yes. And the Court of Appeals, for the 12th District Court of Appeals, addressed the specific issue of whether pursuant to the last antecedent rule, for uninsured motorist coverage under another policy would modify only insured family member, or whether it would modify named insured and insured family member. And their conclusion was there are two reasonable interpretations of this language. And obviously the three members of the 12th District Court of Appeals, one of the judges on the 8th District Court of Appeals in the Safeco case, which was determined to be in conflict in this situation, agreed with that position that there was not that there was only one definite not there was only one definite legal meaning, but in fact that there was an ambiguity present here, and the ambiguity was that you could construe it either to apply just to insured family member, or in the alternative to apply to both.
Does it matter that the language of the policy says uninsured, and it doesn't say uninsured, underinsured?
I don't believe that it is directly relevant to this particular issue, because Mr. Slattery had both uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage under the American States policy. So it would apply whether it was interpreted to mean just uninsured or whether it was interpreted to mean both.
But in relationship to the policy that's in dispute, he had 12.5, they had 500. And so what I'm saying is his language said uninsured, so as to him, he was underinsured. And so would there be an expectation of the driver of the car, the owner of the car, that, okay, he may be covered up to his limits, but for my policy's sake, he's still underinsured?
Well, I think potentially there would be, and I think, Your Honor, your point illustrates a fundamental fact that we do not wear our insurance coverage status on our sleeve. We do not have that information available to any, for example, Linda Wohl in this case, when she permits Jim Slattery to drive the to drive her somewhere in that vehicle, she doesn't ask Jim Slattery, what is your insurance status? Just like, I mean, we all have experience allowing other individuals to utilize our vehicles, and I think it would truly be a rare individual who knew the specific insurance status and limits of every individual who was either a passenger or a permissive user of their vehicles.
It would probably be a rare individual who even thought about insurance when they gave somebody permission to drive. I want to go back to the language. Under the interpretation that you're asking this court to construe, because you see the language as ambiguous, and that second part, not you or any family member, but the one that reads any other person occupying your covered auto who is not named insured, there's really superfluous. If your definition or interpretation is correct, there's really some superfluous language in there, isn't it? Because all they'd have to say is you or any family member or any other person occupying your covered auto, and then go into the exclusion for the other. They'd have a whole series of words that are not necessary. And how would you account for that, other than the fact, of course, that insurance contract drafters tend to be verbose and stilted anyway.
Well, I think that there is a distinction in the motorist policy between what is a named insured and you. And the definition in this case, the remainder of the definition in this case includes the word you and references named insured, but does not, as you're familiar with the insurance, many insurance policies, they typically, if there's a specific definition of a word or phrase that is non-conventional or that the carrier wants to establish specifically, they will bold or quote or whatever, they'll set it apart in some fashion. Named insured in this particular definition does not have any specific delineation that indicates what its reference would be in this particular policy. And in fact, therefore would be given its ordinary meaning, and that would be named insured under the motorist policy. And Jim Slattery is clearly not a named insured under motorist policy. He's a named insured under an American States policy, but I think that the presence of the term named insured does not make it superfluous because Linda, it doesn't make it confusing because Linda Wool would be an insured. Linda Wool would be insured under the underinsured motorist coverage provisions of the policy by virtue of the definition of you in the policy. This court has addressed the distinction between claimants, insureds, and policyholders in Westfield Insurance Company versus Gladys. And obviously, this court is familiar. Westfield involved was a decision in the context of Scott Ponser versus Liberty Mutual, where an employee outside the course and scope of his employment was an insured under a corporate named insureds policy. And the teaching from this court in Gladys involve. It's important to consider the fact that it was made in the context of a corporate named insured, a corporate named insured who wouldn't have. Family members would not have the same kind of context that an individual, an auto policy such as motorist in this case issued to Linda Wool would have. And in the Gladys decision, this court said that while an ambiguity is construed in favor of one who has been determined to be an insured, an ambiguity in the preliminary question of whether a claimant is insured is construed in favor of the policyholder. So it's important in this context to consider, number one, that Jim Slattery wasn't insured under this policy. And at that point, the inquiry could be at an end. But if, in fact, the issue is, does the policyholder benefit in this case, the answer is clearly yes. This case is the antithesis of a Scott Ponser situation because Linda Wool benefited in many ways from Jim Slattery's presence in her vehicle. He drove her where she was going, and she didn't have to drive, and thus was operating the vehicle in this case on her behalf. She actually received more money from the settlement in this case, from the tortfeasor in this case, than she would have been able to if, in fact, a different allocation was made of the tortfeasor's limits. And third, as the 12th District noted, Wool pays premiums for uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage to protect permissive users and passengers in her insured vehicle to the tune of what her policy, the terms of her policy, and she has an expectation related to that. The specific language as applied to the named insured used by motorists has been found to be reasonably subject to two different interpretations by four judges of Ohio's courts of appeal. That alone demonstrates that it's ambiguous, assuming that the Court of Appeals judges are reasonable people. Motorist tries to expand the number of cases which this court should examine to evaluate the ambiguity issue, but a close examination of those cases demonstrates that other decisions do not consider the narrow issue presented in this appeal.
Counsel, I'd like to go back to your comment about benefiting the policyholder here.
Yes.
Is that interpretation found in any of our cases? Because it seemed to me that when we talked about benefiting the policyholder, we're talking about the money going directly to the individual who then receives the payments, which in this case is not the policyholder. Mr. Slattery actually gets the payments, as I understand it, for the UIM.
Correct.
So it seems like you're coming up with a creative argument. Has that been adopted by any of the cases that we have?
Well, this court in Gladys at paragraph 38 said Nationwide versus King versus Nationwide Insurance Company held that the use of a vehicle by or for the corporate, now it's a corporate case, but the corporate policyholder precipitated coverage. This holding is reasonable because it arguably benefits the policyholder to insure against losses sustained by those operating vehicles on its behalf. I mean, in this situation, Linda Wohl asks Mr. Slattery to operate the vehicle
on her
behalf.
But we're talking about an individual, not a corporation in this
Correct.
Particular case. So, I mean, is that the only case you can refer to?
That's the closest, yes.
Okay, thank you.
And at this point, I had agreed to defer some time to...
Counsel, let me ask you another thing.
Sorry.
I didn't notice from the record whether Slattery was... What was the relationship between Slattery and Ms. Wohl?
They were not family members. I believe they were friends.
Same age?
Close, yes.
Oh, and how old was that?
How old is Linda Wohl?
Yeah, how old are these people?
This is Mr. Slattery, and Linda Wohl would be contemporary.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Norby.
Defer the remainder of my time.
Mr. Ballou, I think we better get him up here. Mr. Ballou?
Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. I think the court has inquired of all the issues, but the real point is there's no conflict between the 12th and the 8th Circuit here. In Slattery's case, in this case, we have a permissive operator of a vehicle defined as an insured under the policy. You know, appellant can write whatever policy it wants, but it's the Scrivener, and all these ambiguities have got to be construed in favor of the non-Scrivener. And I think that all that militates towards the opinions that the court have demonstrated below. Ambiguity, this case is a definition of ambiguity. Judges don't understand the language, lawyers don't understand the language, college professors disagree on the language. You wrote it, the ambiguities ought to be construed in favor of the non-Scrivener, which in this case was Slattery. And the other part is if you look at the Saeed case, which was cited in our brief earlier, you know, these parties were in a first-party relationship for a while. They defended Slattery. They negotiated the case, did a good job, and at the very last minute decided you're not an insured, accepted this representation without reservation, and only after long litigation, prolonged interaction, defending him and handling the case, now want to claim that he is not insured, is not an insured party. So we think Saeed, the first party relationship that these parties ought to have, preclude appellant from raising these arguments. And the courts below did not, in the Court of Appeals, in this decision on the motion for summary judgment, did not deal with the issues of waiver, estoppel, and others, which certainly just rear their ugly heads in cases like this, but we think the only interpretation you can give is the one that we suggest. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ballou. Mr. Vollmer, you saved 3 minutes of your time.
Sir, you didn't have a chance to talk about the benefit to the policyholder if we did find an ambiguity. Would you comment on that? Because I know the Court of Appeals basically accepted the argument of opposing counsel here.
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. To me, what this comes down to is a question of contract. And historically, this concept of benefiting one party or the other under the terms of an insurance policy has its origins in contract. The reason that a non-scripter has a benefit or has the ambiguity read in their favor is because that party, and really, I think that's a bit of an overstatement. I think it's actually the parties to the contract, between the parties to the contract, the one who has not drafted that contract.
The policyholder?
The policyholder, in an insurance context, has ambiguities read in their favor. And irrespective of whether we're talking about a contract with a between two individuals or a contract between a person and their insurance company, in either case, we're talking about people who have bargained for their contract. And that's the reason why we look at someone outside of the contract and we say that person does not benefit from any alleged ambiguity because they didn't bargain for,
counsel,
they didn't shop for the coverage.
I think that that's stated in Gladys, the relationship between the who the actual parties to the contract are. But let me ask you to respond to the last point that was made by opposing counsel, that the representation of Mr. Slattery throughout this process should weigh in our determination. What's your response to that?
Well, I disagree with that because two things were going on simultaneously. One was there was a UIM claim made against motorists, but motorists also had a contractual duty under the liability coverage. And we've said all along that Mr. Slattery met the definition of insured for purposes of the liability coverage. But as the Holloman decision says, and as all the courts, including Keffer, who have looked at this, there is no public policy reason that that we can't define insured differently, separately, for purposes of UIM coverage. There is no waiver here, and in fact, upon learning of the proposed allocation, motorists promptly notified Mr. Slattery that he would not qualify for an insured under the policy. That is very clear in the record, and before any release was signed, either by Ms. Wool or Mr. Slattery, motorists had made its position clear. That did not change the allocation, and there is no benefit to the policyholder here, Linda Wool, because clearly she received virtually all of the tortfeasor's limits. So, and that was knowing that motorists was saying that Mr. Slattery was not an insured under its policy. She couldn't have fared any better in her settlement, even knowing that motorists was denying Mr. Slattery coverage under the UIM portion of the policy.
Counsel, I want to challenge your one statement. And this is part of what I'm struggling with because I don't have that hard a time reading your language. But you said there's no public policy that we can't define this differently than we do. Wouldn't you think that there is an implied public policy in this state from the legislature and from this court that insurance contracts ought to be as simple and straightforward and as easy to understand as possible? And when you set about to have three different universes of who's covered in one policy, that wouldn't. Maybe you don't think there is an implied public policy to keep insurance language as straightforward and as understandable as possible for every citizen of this state.
I see that I'm out of time, but I would like to address that issue. I think that what we're talking about here, liability coverage versus UIM coverage, is that, you know, it's important for liability coverage to be tied to the vehicle involved, I think that speaks for itself. However, when a person goes out and buys their UIM coverage, that's not typically discussed when you get into another person's car. That's a private decision that people make for themselves. They know how much, I know how much I've paid for UIM coverage. I know whether I rejected the coverage or accepted the coverage, and that's what I bargained for myself. And that's what we're talking about with this definition. And the fact that we have different definitions is not in any way inconsistent with that.
Do you know how much your grandchildren are covered for when they get in your car?
My grandchildren?
Yeah, if you had them.
If I had them.
There's a huge presumption there.
Well, I think that's a very good point because my hypothetical grandchildren would not be presumably living with me.
Right.
And no, I wouldn't know that, but I do know what my own child, my actual child, who does live with me, I do know what that child is covered for because I bought the coverage. And that's what we're really talking about here is people know what they buy for themselves. And in a broader context in a free market society, you know, we know what we're gonna go out and purchase. And we make that individual judgment on what we need and what we don't need.
Well, counsel, could Ms. Wall have purchased uninsured motorist coverage for anybody that was in her car, regardless of their status with another carrier?
With another company, yes.
But not with motorists, because you don't offer that.
We don't offer that, that is correct.
You've used your time, Mr. Ballmer.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.